We're going to welcome in audio only listeners. Everybody, welcome into the All 22 NFL show. You got Chris and Ray. We just reviewed the top running backs in the 2025 NFL draft, which is only 2 weeks away, which is insane to say. And it's a great group of running backs, people. But first, give us a review, like the podcast, subscribe to the podcast. We need you listening so that we can keep making these videos. Go to all-22.com because we need people to sign up and play this game. It is the best fantasy football game out there. It's the only fantasy football game with full 53-man rosters, including offensive linemen, where you get to choose personal packages and access to PFF grading and advanced stats to make decisions each week. To learn more and sign up, again, go to all-22.com or go to the App Store today. The other thing, Ray, there's a bunch of predictions that I'm just dying to make in this NFL draft. I think last week, earlier this week, maybe, I talked about Armon Membu getting picked fifth to go to the Jaguars. That is a pick that I've been dying to make. And if I could put money on it, I would. But right now, there's not a way for me to do that. But what if I could get paid for making that pick? And right now, I just learned about Pickpool, which is the hottest draft app out there. Pickpool is a place where you can go and predict your mock draft. Nobody cared about your mock draft till now. Go and put your mock draft for either the first 10 picks if you don't know ball, or the full 32 if you do, and try to get it right. And if you get it right, and if you beat your competition, there is cash prizes for you at the end, and it's $0 to join. You join for free. It's $0 to compete right now. Go to the App Store, iOS App Store, and download the Pickpool app today. The web version will be out soon. And yes, this is an ad for Pickpool. We are excited to have them as a sponsor. Ray, why don't we finally jump into our rankings of this running back tier? I just wanted to say really quick, I had other guys, right? We reviewed 6-7 guys. I did 12. Maybe I can start it off by talking about some of those guys. You probably know more about them than I do, but I'm sure as hell that you did not rank them like I did.
Of course not. I don't do those things until like April 22nd. I'm not gonna do these.
All right,
but yeah, go for it.
Okay,
they haven't heard you talk enough. So by all means.
So I have a tier four that only has one of the guys that we talked about today. They definitely heard me talk way too much, but we're gonna do 12-7, even though I have another guy. 12-8, 13-8. Whatever it is. DJ Giddens out of Kansas State. I know a lot of people are liking this guy right now. Something about him to me just didn't really translate to NFL talent. Smaller, shifty back. I think he'll have a team that kind of bets on that. I just didn't think he has enough power to be productive to earn that opportunity at the next level. We're seeing those shifty guys in the NFL right now with some heft to them, right? Like when you talk about a Devin Singletary or a guy like that in that mold, a lot of times their lower half is thick, right? They're super shifty. I didn't see enough of that in DJ Giddens' frame for me to really buy into it. Don't think he can really be a three down back at the next level. Not sure if you had a chance to watch him.
Yeah, I just wonder about the breakaway speed in the NFL too. He's shifty, but small stature, and I'm not sure that he has the breakaway athleticism to really last to carve out enough of a role given his short stature or small stature rather. To last. So I have some concerns, but he's a really good player. He could be a spell guy, but definitely not someone who really carries the load. He's part of a committee.
Exactly, dude. And Bashaul Tuten from Virginia Tech is my next guy on the list. Super fun to watch, but again, a pretty small back. I thought he did have a little bit more of that low to the ground shiftiness, right? A little bit of a stronger base under him. So I had him a little bit higher. Probably have like a fourth or fifth round grade. That just shows how deep this running back group is. He's a guy I liked and actually said a little bit more Devin Singletary to his game. Again, maybe not a guy that's a four down back, three down back at the next level, but a guy that I definitely think has a role on a team.
Keep going. I want to see who you had above him if you have him as your next guy already.
I have Jaden Blue as my next guy out of Texas.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. All right, go ahead.
Is this because you're saying, oh my gosh, because you don't like him or because you like him a lot more?
Just go.
Okay. Jaden Blue, smaller back, didn't get a big workload last year at Texas. And honestly, I think disappointed a lot of people. And I get it. I watched this film and I totally get it. But there are certain athletes that when you watch the film, you can tell that they have the frame, they have the body type, they have the athleticism to be successful, even if they haven't shown that success yet, right? And I think when I'm talking about Tuten and I'm talking about Giddens, I'm not sure they have the frame, right? I'm not sure they have that build to be those guys at the next level. Where Jaden Blue, the frame is definitely there. He has the build to be that guy. Maybe he's a little bit small, but I like the way his body moves. I like his size. So I'm betting on pure traits here and saying the traits are good enough to be successful while maybe the other guy's traits are not.
Yeah, the traits are good enough to be successful, which is why you have him ranked too low. Oh, says the guy who hasn't ranked anybody. But yeah, no, you have him too low.
I have him too low. Let me tell you about the guys I have above him. Maybe you'll like them too. Yep. But I have Breshad Smith next out of SMU. Just getting to my notes on Breshad Smith. Breshad Smith, so really nice build. I do like this guy's build a lot. To offer more than just a receiving back, which is kind of what he was for SMU when you watch the film. And I think it's just more of, if you watched SMU, we got to actually see a game live, which is so cool to see. But the quarterback at SMU is built for that style of game. Doesn't necessarily mean the running back has to be that in a different situation. So I think the usage made sense for SMU, but I think he's more than that at the next level. I think he's slightly too easy to bring down, doesn't have enough yards after contact to his game, at least on film. But I liked his vision. I liked his elusiveness. I think there's a lot there to be unlocked, and a player that showed me enough that I'm like, okay, he has something a little bit special to his game. What'd you think about him?
I think he's missing some leg drive. And that's the key thing holding him back. But this is a former receiver. He's young to the position and shows a lot of flashes for someone who does not have a lot of experience in the backfield. So that's incredibly enticing. But I would have Jaden Blue above him because I do think Jaden Blue is built for the NFL more so than Smith is. Smith is really intriguing and could also, there are a lot of markers that could indicate success for him at the next level. But I think Blue's a bit of an easier projection in that regard than Smith is. So I'd have Blue above him.
What about Damian Martinez from Miami, who's next on my list? He is a totally different back than the other guys on this list so far, because this dude is just a punch you in the mouth kind of guy. Really good patience, has some cutting ability, right? Can move with a little bit with the shiftiness, but that's definitely not his game. And I think the biggest knock on him is just like, there's not a lot of speed there. He's just not really a speed threat. So you're not talking about him as a three down guy. I don't really see him being a major receiving threat at the next level. I mean, I think Cam Ward definitely unlocked something in some of the players around him that elevated them. I think that's probably true for Damian Martinez as well. But a guy to me that, you know, you need some goal line carries, you need some, you know, tush push gets banned and you need a guy to get you 1 or 2 yards. Damian Martinez can definitely be that guy.
I think he may be able to carry the load, but I don't think he would be anything special if he could carry the load. I see him today as a Scataboo light in a sense. He's not as ferocious. He doesn't have quite the nuance as a receiver out of the backfield that Scataboo has and some of those abilities, but he's also a couple years younger and has a nice, you know, 6 foot, 217 pounds, I think, is Damian Martinez from the combine. So he has some of the markers and tools, but is he dynamic enough? Does he have enough nuance to his game? I don't think he really showed that consistently at all in college. So to me, he's not someone who could justify being a bell cow at this stage, but it wouldn't be the most shocking thing if he were to develop as one in the NFL. Probably someone who, if someone in front of him has an injury or something, he has to step into a starting role, he will hold his own. And then from there, if he's in a good situation, maybe something happens at that regard. But I don't think immediately coming into the league, he projects as a high-end starter by any means. But he's a contributor and can chew up carries as needed for a team.
Would you have Jaden Blue over him?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
What about the next guy I have, which is Devin Neal? I'm really interested because a lot of people are super high on this guy. And I think he's good. I think he's good. But I think I'm still in that range of probably not three down backs, right? I think there are so many good backs in this draft that could be that. So what kind of separated some of these guys for me is just like, do I see them actually carrying a load for a team, which is not really frequently happening anyway in the NFL right now. But Devin Neal, good hands, nice receiving weapon out of the backfield or out wide. He has that flexibility, makes the first guy miss almost every single time, but he's small. Definitely not a run you over kind of guy. And there's going to be limitations to the amount of field, the amount of snaps a team would be willing to give this guy. That's my take, but a lot of people are high on Devin Neal.
Devin Neal reminds me of Tashard Choice from back in the day where he's just productive. There's nothing special about him. He's just a good football player that isn't some dynamic, explosive, just jump off the screen at you guy. But you're going to look up and he's going to have 18 carries for 86 yards. And you're like, oh, how the hell did that happen? And he's just kind of just constantly churning and keeping you on schedule. I'm a big fan of Devin Neal, but I'm also a ceiling chaser, so I'd have Jaden Blue ahead of him. But I totally understand the love for Devin Neal and think he's right there in that same tier.
All right. Well, this is where I think my list kind of starts to get a little wacky and definitely.
It's a long time ago that left the station. Go ahead.
All right. Well, my number eight running back in this class is a guy that we reviewed today, and that's Dylan Sampson out of Tennessee. So Dylan Sampson out of Tennessee for the audio only listeners, 20 years old, so a younger guy, 5'8", 200 pounds, 3 years at Tennessee, but only 1,000 offensive snaps. Grading wise, 90.5 offensive grade, had 1,488 rushing yards, 22 touchdowns. So a good back, right? This is a guy that showed a lot of promise, fun back to watch, really good patience, good lateral movements, nice speed to his game. I think he's a, like you kind of pointed it out, and I had the note here, just a willing pass protector, although maybe not like a great one. And also like will fight, will put his neck on the line to get a couple extra yards and be a little bit more aggressive than a guy his size typically would be. But I think his size is going to limit him as an every down back. Another guy that I'm like, is he actually a three down back at the next level? And I also agreed with you against contact. When he gets kind of rocked up, the ball comes out way too easy. And at the next level, there was one play you showed where he takes on some contact and gets kind of like stood up and he didn't fumble. But I was just like, at the NFL level, that ball is getting absolutely rocked out of there. And there was just so many instances of that because I think that the strength just isn't necessarily there for him. So it was a concern of mine. And I have one guy that we didn't film above him who's next. I'll get to that after you tell me, like, where do you have Dylan Sampson? Am I way too low on him?
So, again, I only rank like the people we review in these episodes because I'm allergic to rankings. I had Dylan Sampson actually, 1, 2, 3, 4, fifth. I had fifth. And here's why, Chris. He's just a kid. He's 20 years old. Get in the weight room, you know, get stronger. He's not old enough to drink yet. Maybe he is today. I don't know. There's just some natural growth that has to be done there, but the speed and the lateral agility he has it in levels that are hard to find, even among NFL running backs. So if you have a skill set that is in demand and there isn't a ton of supply, I'm probably going to rank you a bit higher than I otherwise would because the tape today, yeah, sure, the tape today, Scattaboo's is better than his, just tape for tape if you just watch one after the other. But Scattaboo, 23 years old, how well does it translate when you just bang heads with NFL players and they're grown men? I mean, it's different when it's a 27-year-old linebacker for the Texans and it is, you know, a 20-year-old linebacker for the Longhorns. It's just different. And so how well does that translate to the next level? You know, when projecting that, there's a bit of a projection with strength for Sampson. I still don't believe he's an every down back by any means. I think if he's in a committee, though, he could be a highly, highly effective player for a team. If he keeps the fumbles under control, even with the worst that he has today, if he can hold on to the football, Charlie Friday Night Lights, but if he can hold on to the football, I think he can really add a dynamic element to someone's running game in the NFL. And if he's asked to do that, he's going to grade very well for you in all 22 and really be a nice value add for someone. Again, he's just a pup. He's 20.
It'll be really interesting because it's hard to like, how do you judge the career of a player against another? It's like for running backs, it's not yards. It's not touchdowns necessarily. It may not even be PFF grading, right? Maybe all 22 points. Maybe that's how we do it. But I would be very interested. And I would probably put some good money on betting on the overall kind of all 22 points of a Cam Scattaboo against a Dylan Sampson. Because I was a lot lower on Dylan Sampson. Because he's not a guy that I think is going to step in and he's like, okay, he's number one in somebody's locker room. Like he's one on the depth chart at running back right away. He's going to have to really work for that. And like you're saying, he's 20 years old. Maybe he could get there. But to me, it's just like, it wasn't that obvious.
No, it's not obvious, but you're wrong. I do think it matters who they get drafted by. I mean, number one, a nice wide zone in space scheme would be great for Sampson. But the thing about running back, and here's why I'm not going to say I hate reviewing running backs. It's that so much of it is just situational dependent. The greatest running back prospect since Adrian Peterson had to fight tooth and nail for just standard competency levels in production with the New York Giants before going to the Philadelphia Eagles and then immediately winning a Super Bowl. So if situation can so strongly impact a prospect as great as Saquon Barkley, obviously I like to do it, but when you start like kind of splitting hairs with, you know, Scadaboo versus Samson, situation just matters so much once they get to the pros with running backs more so than probably any other position besides maybe quarterback. It's just, it's so tough to project without knowing the landing spot just yet and how exactly they're going to fit in to the schemes and plans of the coaches. But nevertheless, we're going to continue on. But yeah, I had Samson as fifth in this exercise.
That's it, dude. That's such a good point. Cause I think if we do our rankings today and then we do them after the draft, they're going to be so different. And you know, you might say to yourself at home, be like, oh, of course they're going to be different. Cause if the, you know, if a team drafts DJ Giddens in the second round and Cam Scadaboo doesn't go to the fourth round, you're going to put DJ Giddens above Cam Scadaboo. Like, no, that's not true at all. Because if the guy drafted in the fourth round goes to a team that I like in a situation I think is productive for running backs, that guy automatically leapfrogs so many other dudes. And a great example of that, for this is a funny story, but Ray's bachelor party was actually at the NFL draft. And we were there. Najee Harris got drafted by the Steelers. And I was a huge Najee Harris fan. I still am. And I thought he was one of those players where I was like, man, this is going to be a really special running back at the next level. I think he's got like everything it takes to be a really productive running back at the next level. And he goes to Pittsburgh, who had no offensive line for the first 3.5 years of his career. And, you know, 1,000 yards every year on a really bad offensive system. I'm really excited to see what he's going to be as a Charger. Like, we're talking about a situation like Najee Harris last year, a year younger. You might say like, hey, his upside was better last year. It's like, no. I would have this year Najee Harris ranked so much higher than last year, being that he's now on the Chargers. So situation is so important. I'm happy you pointed that out. Number seven for me is RJ Harvey. And I know another guy that you did not rank, but RJ Harvey to me was the one guy that I was like, dang, I really wish we reviewed his film because I think people would have had a lot of fun watching this guy. Super, super shifty for the amount of thickness that this guy carries. Lateral movement is absolutely phenomenal. He's got good vision. I wouldn't say it's great vision, but good vision. And just for his size, the strength is legit. And you might be thinking, okay, shifty with big size, good strength. He's probably slow. No, he is not slow. This dude breaks runs and actually goes, right? So RJ Harvey, I don't have all the information on him because he's not a guy we reviewed, but a guy for me that like on draft day I'm watching because if that guy goes to a good team, he's going up, up, up my rankings, right? Like that's a guy that I'm like, he can actually be a guy that starts. Like I think about like, what's his name on the Seahawks, the running back for the Seahawks, Kenneth Walker, like Isaiah Pacheco, who goes into those situations and like, oh, I didn't expect this guy to all of a sudden just be like a three down back. And they are. RJ Harvey for me this year is that guy.
There are only two issues with RJ Harvey, and it's major injury history and he's 24 years old, which for 2025, these things don't affect you, right? Or 2026 for that matter, unless obviously he gets injured, which could happen to anybody. That's about it. This isn't someone you're probably going to sign to a second contract because he's already 24 years old at running back. So by the time his rookie deal's up, he's going to be, what, 28, 29 years old. You're just not investing big money into someone like that who's not a special, special talent. Everything else you said is dead on. He's a phenomenal player. He's a phenomenal player. He could start in the NFL year one this upcoming season for a team and be perfectly fine. Problem is, what's the longevity there? And there's a bit of an injury history, so maybe you don't want to put too much on his plate because you want to see how his body will respond. But overall, just in a vacuum, this is a really darn good football player.
Super, super fun. Like, super fun to watch. Go watch him. Just you know, you're having a hard time sleeping tonight. Turn his film on. You ready to have a fist fight, Ray? You ready for it?
You've been throwing punches this whole episode. You've been trying to recreate like Rocky 5 or 6, whatever number they're on now with Creed. Scadaboo.
We're on to Creed.
Yeah, it's Creed now, right? They've already been, has there been three already? There's been three Creeds or two? I think there's been three. So,
okay.
All right, what do you want to fight about first? Because I have Camp Scadaboo at 7, if that's what you want to fight about, which apparently you do.
Let's fight about that. I would love to fight about that. All right, you have him at 7. Let me just give the information quick, and then you can tell everybody why you're wrong. But Cam Scadabue out of Arizona State, 23 years old, 5'9", 219 pounds, 2 years at Sacramento, 2 at Arizona State, 2,274 career offensive snaps, 39.5 vert and 10.3 broad at the combine, 93.3 offensive grade with 1,712 rushing yards and 21 touchdowns this year alone, 4.09 yard after contact. Why are you wrong about him?
Look, Chris, it's just how well does it translate? Like, you can't get into a fist fight every time you carry the football in the NFL. Like, it's going to wear you down. And you're fighting with grown men now, not Big 12 defenders, if that's the conference they were in now, with all the realignment going on in college football. It's just different. You can't do that. You can't get into a bar fight over and over and over again and have longevity as a running back. And you can't get into that many bar fights and win them consistently enough against grown men. So just how well does everything that he does translate to the NFL? I have questions about it. I could find big, strong dudes that just want to beat people. I could find that later on in the draft. I don't have to draft that on day two at the running back position and give them, you know, 20 carries a game. I don't see him dynamic enough to be a bell cow, because the way he creates just puts so much tension and so much strain on the body overall. He could have, you know, perhaps even a phenomenal season like that, but over time, he doesn't strike me as that enough of a specimen to get away with that style over and over again in today's NFL, especially with seasons are only getting longer. They might add another game. They may now go to 18 games coming up here pretty soon too. So that's just more punishment on the body overall. He's already 23 years old. So the longevity is a big thing for me, and just how well does his style translate overall.
So we're actually not going to fight too much about that, because I have him at 5. So I don't think it's like correct. No, you're definitely not always correct, because a lot of what you said, I'll disagree with, and I'll do that in a second. But, you know, like, having him at 5 to me is for some of the reasons you said, right? This is a guy that is a couple of years older than I would like my rookie running back to be. He's definitely had slightly too many carries, right? And that probably means he's not a second contract guy, right? But in reality, how many of these running backs are getting second contracts? Saquon Barkley did not get a second contract with his team, right? You could say it's the dumbest thing that's ever happened in the history of the NFL. Could be, but it's also a state of the running backs in the NFL today, which is, there's 7 or 8 guys in this draft alone that we think could be starting running backs at the next level. And you don't necessarily want to pay one, because guess what? If your offensive line kind of sucks, you have to figure that out first. So Cam Scadabue to me is a guy that I think for the first 4 years of his career, you're going to love every single thing that he brings to the table, and you're going to love the fight that he brings. You're going to love all that. But the biggest thing I disagree with you on is that just because he wasn't playing maybe the best competition, that it wasn't NFL competition. Because one of the notes I have is that a lot of his runs are probably more NFL style runs than any other prospect in this draft. Reason being, so many of them are stuffed either behind the line of scrimmage or at the line of scrimmage. I don't know if you remember us talking about how we hated how much bad football we had to watch in this whole thing. And it's like, when your running back is consistently getting punched in the mouth at or before the line of scrimmage, that's just not great football, right? And at the NFL level, because of how bad some offensive lines are, that happens all the time. So Cam Scadabue to me is a guy that already faced that adversity. And if I'm a team like the Giants and I have Tyron Tracy, who's a great receiving back, it's a perfect complement to that, right? And somebody that I would love and can probably obtain in round 3, right? If you're telling me you have, you know, a top 5 pick in the 3rd round, I think that's just about where I have this guy, right? And even though, just because he's a running back, right? If it was just based on talent alone, I'd say he's probably a top 30 player in the draft, right? But that's not the case, right? This is a running back. This is a running back. So that's not how these are judged, right? This is a guy that's going to be a 3rd round pick, probably, maybe late day 2. But that's why I don't disagree with you too much, because at the end of the day, like, pick 7 to 5 at running back, probably getting picked somewhere in the same range, right? And it's also scheme dependent. And Cam Scadabue, again, I would love to see him paired with one of those smaller, shiftier receiving backs, even though Scadabue can receive the ball, like, he's decent at it. So we're not going to fight too much on that one. But what we are going to fight about is who I have at number 6 on my list,
Number
which
one.
Is Caleb Johnson. So at number six on my list is Caleb Johnson out of Iowa, 21 years old, 6'1", 224 pounds, only 900 career offensive snaps, 4.57 40 at the combine, 162, 10 yard, 86.5 offensive grade, 1,535 rushing yards and 21 touchdowns, but 4.42 yards after contact. I love this guy's vision. I love that he breaks tackles at the second level. I love how powerful he is once his body is moving. I love how efficient he is at finding space. And I love how he can wrap a corner, right? He can get around the corner and find speed and space there. But the fact that when he doesn't have that momentum building, that he's able to get stopped by guys smaller than him and actually brought down is concerning to me. I don't think he's as much of a pile pusher as a guy that's 224 pounds should be. I don't think his long speed is as good as it should be if he's not going to be a total, like, you know, punch you in the mouth kind of guy. I don't think he has that phone booth, like make you miss in a phone booth kind of cutting ability. And I didn't really see next level receiving back ability. So is this a guy that is a poor man's three down back, which is still a productive and valuable player at the next level and a player I really, really like. Like, I'll say that I'm at number six here and I like all of these guys. But to me, it's like, of the guys I have above him, I think that there's something else to their game that will separate them and make them a little bit more special. For him, I just think he's like a really good grinded out, hey, I'm going to give this guy 15 to 20 carries a game and I know what I'm going to get out of it. It just might not ever be like Pro Bowl level play or, you know, like elite level play, top five running back play. I just don't think he has that in him.
The problem is, Chris, that he was on Iowa. And Iowa does absolutely zero offense at all, ever. It just makes everything worse for absolutely everybody on that side of the ball, no matter who's the coordinator. Once you put on that uniform, it's just like your abilities just drop. And now he's going to be away from that, and we're going to see the true Caleb Johnson. I think he's an upper middle class, whatever the hell you just described him as, not poor at all. I think he has, you know, he can afford a picket fence, two kids, a dog, and a nice yard as a bell cow running back in the NFL. I think he is at that level. I think I don't have the number in front of me, but I believe he was of all running backs in the country, he faced the most stacked boxes out of anybody, which again, that's Iowa. It's really hard to kind of just get into a rhythm when that's the case. You have to end up turning the corner in order to do that, as opposed to sort of running your path, making your read, cutting, and then letting natural ability just take over. He never was really afforded that on a consistent basis at Iowa. So everything had to be, I am going to turn the corner, break two arm tackles, and then race to the end zone as best I can, even though I'm really a 4-5 guy. I'm not necessarily a burner, a speedster. I think if he goes into just any offense in the NFL with a baseline level of competency, I think he makes them all way better. I'm a big fan of Caleb Johnson. I had him, but big fan. I have him at four.
Yeah. Okay. So we're not that far off, right? It's two
spots.
We're
fans of this class. It's a good class.
I think such
we need
a
level
class.
Set that, yeah, this class is better than the last couple of years for sure.
Which I'm getting to now, which is like Caleb Johnson to me is Jonathan Taylor, right? Like, and Jonathan Taylor is what a lot of people out there probably think is like a really great back. But to me, it's like when the Colts offensive line took a step back, we saw what Jonathan Taylor really was, right? And that is like Saquon Barkley survived on the Giants offense, but also like showed how special he was even when the offensive line was bad. Jonathan Taylor kind of fell to the level of his offensive line because I don't think he is that special, right? But when it's good, he's really, really good and a really talented player. And that upside is really there. I think Caleb Johnson is just as good as Jonathan Taylor. So interesting take.
And that's not a knock on either of those guys.
Correct. So RJ Harvey at seven, Caleb Johnson at six, Cam Scataboo at five. Did you do your seven?
So I had someone at six. I guess we could start there.
Yeah.
I had Quinshon Judkins at six.
Okay. And let's talk about it.
I think it's a similar archetype kind of to Caleb Johnson. I just think Caleb Johnson is better at it. Because Judkins isn't going to really make you miss in a phone booth. He's going to get you some tough yards. He's going to run hard. And maybe it's a matter of when you put him side by side with Travion Henderson, who we'll talk about later, I think you see the difference. to me, Judkins is the type that if it's there, he's going to get it for you. And he's probably going to make the defender feel it a little bit. But if it's not, he's not going to create more than what's there. And I'll keep it to just the on-field stuff when it comes to that. I think he's good. Sixth in this class is good. It's very good. It's right around bell cow territory in the NFL. He can handle 20 carries, 22, 23 carries a game and be fine and hold up and be productive. I just don't think he can be great. I don't think he can be special. I'm not sure how much he elevates what's around him when he is the bell cow. I think he's just someone that can hold the fort down, do some good things for you, but he doesn't change the complexion of your offense like some of the other top backs in this class do.
Okay. So I have him at four. So obviously a little bit above you, but it's really in that same tier of guys. You can jumble them really however you want. But something about him and Caleb Johnson that I think is important to note, and which is why I think we both have those guys still like pretty early, is they didn't take a ton of carries, right? So like they showed us a lot of really good stuff while also still having like pretty fresh legs, which is a really good thing when you're talking about rookie running backs and the longevity of them and how they'll stay healthy at the next level. So I like that. I like that a lot about both of those prospects. So it sounds like we kind of have them flipped, but you know, again, I don't really see an issue with either with it either way. But Quinshon Judkins out of Ohio State, 21 years old, 6 feet tall, 221 pounds, 2 years at Ole Miss before this last year at Ohio State. 1,700 career snaps, combined 4.48 40 time, 38.5 vert, 11 broad. Grading wise, 88.8 offensive grade, 161 receiving yards and 2 touchdowns, and then 1,060 rushing yards and 14 touchdowns, 3.04 yards after contact. So I guess the reason I see him a little bit different than you is I think I saw what Caleb Johnson is on film, and I agree with you, the loaded box definitely held him back. But again, I think there's going to be a lot of offensive lines that aren't good in the NFL, and you're going to get hit a lot behind the line of scrimmage, and you need to be able to work through that and get that little extra effort. And I didn't see enough of that from Caleb Johnson, but with Quinshon Judkins, I feel like I did, right? While there might not be that one crazy special trait with Quinshon Judkins, which makes him like that next level prospect for me, his combine results were insane, right? So like we're talking about athletically for a 220-pound back, a very special athlete. But on top of that, the thing that like does stick out to me is that burst that he has, that next level burst when he does get a hole or he finds a little bit of space. It's like you're basically putting the tape on fast forward and he's just bursting through that space and getting an extra 10, 5, whatever it is, right? Whatever's available to him. But he's eating that up. He eats it up. And Caleb Johnson does not do that, right? Which is a differentiator for me from those two guys. They're both also very young prospects. So like to me, they're in that same tier, but I'm going to take the risk on Judkins as the more athletic special talent that I think, again, like maybe we saw good things from him, but I saw a little bit more special from Judkins than I did Caleb Johnson.
It's a risk. We'll say that, but okay. What's next?
I think I'm caught up. So RJ Harvey, Caleb Johnson, Cam Scadabo, Quinshon Judkins. Did you do 7 through 4 there?
Yes. My 7 was Scadabo, 6 was Judkins, 5 was Sampson. And then yeah, Johnson's my 4. So I'm up to 3.
So I don't know if we have the same 3. I'm thinking maybe we don't. And I really struggled with 3 and 2. And it's funny because,
oh boy,
I think my 3 might be the better all 22 player. Like in all 22, this could be potentially the best running back in the whole draft, right? But Travion Henderson to me is number 3. And it's kind of because, all right, this is a 22-year-old guy that played all 4 years, right? Didn't come out early. So he has a little bit more wear and tear on his body. 5'10", 200 pounds. So he doesn't have this elite size to him, right? But he's a great athlete. 4.43, 40 time. 38.5 vert, 10.8 broad. So we're talking about like great combine numbers, but again, a little bit smaller. 88.4 offensive grade, 1,000 rushing yards, 10 touchdowns. So we're talking about a guy that splits some carries, 4.43 after yards after contact, which is crazy. To me, best receiving back in this draft, I think hands down, don't think it's close. Thought he is the most intelligent blocker, most willing blocker, best results as a blocker. Has probably, I don't want to say the best vision, but it's close, like very, very close to the best vision of this group. His elusiveness is fantastic. amazing patience, right? Such underrated game when you're talking about speed for him. Think you can line him up anywhere. Like I'm talking like go have him be a wide out on one play, put him in the slot, put him as an H back, put him as a true running back. He could do any of it. I think he's super smart. And I don't think he ever really has to come off the field other than you're talking about a guy that's only 200 pounds and wear and tear may be a thing for him at some point in his career. A little bit small, not as great with contact as other guys in this class, but again, he's 200 pounds. You can't really compare him against some of these guys that are 230. It's just not necessarily fair. But a guy, again, it's like because of how well-rounded his game is and the fact that maybe he's not an every down back, he might grade so, so well at the next level. So he's a guy I'm super bought in on that, like, kind of regardless of situation, I think he's a guy that can be special. But in certain situations, I think he could be the best back in this class.
Yeah, so he's also my number three. But the thing is, he does everything so well. First of all, I was flabbergasted that he only weighed in at 202 at the combine. When you watch him just absolutely take it to some defenders, whether it's in pass protection or as a lead blocker for Will Howard on a lot of these designed runs and different reverses and things of that nature, flabbergasted he's only 202, which is also like kind of a slight red flag, which we'll get into. But coming out of Virginia in high school, he was the best high school running back I had seen since Saquon Barkley, which at that point was, what, 5-6 years since Barkley was a prospect. He was that good. He was the best one. The explosion was just absolutely next level. Phenomenal back, better than Bijan. But coming out of high school, again, into the college ranks, he was the number one guy I had seen since Saquon. And that explosion, I mean, it translates, that explosiveness, everything. He had a lot of explosive runs, long runs for touchdowns, breakaway speed, and all that, while also combining and fusing that with phenomenal pass protection, all those little things that are done right, finishing his runs. Now, does he have next level leg drive? No, as some of the other bigger guys or someone like Genty. No, he doesn't have that leg drive. But everything else he has, and the mentality and style where he's not afraid to lower his shoulder, he's phenomenal. He's phenomenal at pretty much everything but a next level leg drive, which not everybody has. And that's okay if you're so good at everything else. The thing is, I think he had a Liz Frank injury at some point during his college career too, which always scares me when you start getting into foot injuries with running backs. And then it's just, can he handle a 22 carry workload? Because if I have him on my team, I want to give him 20 carries, but I also want him in the game on third down to pass protect, to make plays out of the backfield because he can do all that. But can he hold up? I don't know if he can because he had a bit of an injury history at Ohio State with ankles and foot injuries and such. And obviously they brought in Judkins. They were able to split carry. So that wasn't a concern this past year. So his play, his tape, his film, to me, it warrants a top 32 draft selection. You add in the injury history and everything else. Okay, I get it. You want to say top 40, top 45. I'm cool with that. But am I going to draft someone in the top 40, top 45 picks of the NFL draft and only give them 13 carries a game? I don't know about that. And that's the one thing that holds me back, is I'm not sure if he's going to just physically hold up. But when he's on the field, he brings it, and he's one of, if not the best player on the field most times he's actually out there. Phenomenal player.
So I'm going to ask you a difficult question, right? If he is on the board for Dallas at pick, what do you guys have, like 43 or something like that?
44, yeah.
44. Is that the pick you want them to make?
If the Cowboys took Tet McMillan at 12 and Travion Henderson is there at 44, I'm throwing a party. And like, I have another party scheduled already for the next day on Saturday, but like, I'll throw another party that Friday night if the Cowboys get Travion Henderson at 44. He's very good.
Yeah, and I agree. I think he's phenomenal. Sounds like
maybe, I just said I was concerned if I draft someone in the top 45, and here I am saying, yeah, 44, I'm going to throw a party. But they have Javonte, who's kind of a bigger body, bigger back there, who could take some of the load. And we've seen what they do with running backs, and the offensive line on the interior is still very good, even if it's not what it was back in their heyday, so to speak. But yeah, I think he's a great fit for that, and I'll be perfectly fine. You get a Tet McMillan, then you get the most explosive remaining back on the board there. Yeah, by all means.
It's what Dallas was missing, right? There was explosiveness missing from the Cowboys run game. And I think like you solved that instantly with Henderson. Sounds like we probably have the same top two. So Omarion Hampton for me is number two. I think it's, you know, not a hot take, but North Carolina, 22 years old, 6 feet tall, 221 pounds, 3 years at North Carolina, 1,559 snaps, 4.46 40 at the combine, 88.4 offensive grade, 1,660 rushing yards and 15 touchdowns, and 4.35 yards after contact this past season. I'll go first. Omarion Hampton, just the size, strength, and speed combo that he offers is first round worthy in my mind. Like, I'm talking about like very, very special prospect. Speed is real in open space, which I think is what separates him so much from a Caleb Johnson, even though their size is very similar. And also the way they play football is very similar. I think the speed element to Hampton's game is like a significant step forward. Not only that, this is a guy that when he like sees the hole, he hits the hole, right? He's so decisive in the way that he explodes through holes once they appear for him. And he has good vision that, you know, pair that with the speed that he has and the strength that he has, it's like instantly 5 to 10 yards, right? And that's any team in the NFL is going to sign up for that, like in my opinion. Strong at the point of attack, always runs people over when there's the ability to do that. I don't think he misses opportunities, so he makes the most out of the carries that he was given. I do have the same kind of knock on him. I don't think he's like a complete make you miss in a phone booth type of guy, although I'd say he's slightly better than the Caleb Johnson, Omarion Hamptons of the world. And I'd say kind of, again, similar
you
thing
mean
to Caleb.
Yeah, I got you.
Yes, sorry. Same kind of thing as Caleb Johnson, where it's like when he's met in the backfield, sometimes he struggles to escape that because he doesn't have that buildup of momentum where, you know, Genty, who we're going to talk about in a minute, and Travion Henderson like will escape that, right? Because they have a little bit more shiftiness to them. They don't just depend on like that size, speed, strength combo. They have a little bit more. But like to me, it's funny because I was talking about Najee Harris before, but like I had Najee Harris as like a top 20 pick. I think he went like 23, 24 or something like that to the Steelers. But Omarion Hampton reminds me so much of that kind of a player. The things I liked about Najee, a lot of the same characteristics I just said here, but better speed, right? Like significantly better speed than Najee. But a lot of the same like really good quality. So a prospect I'm very high on. I like a lot, and I would have him as like a top 25 pick in the draft today, especially with the class that we have today.
Yeah, I feel like the top two backs in this class, the evaluations are pretty cut and dry with their archetypes. So there's not much to add with Hampton. Just when you watch Hampton, it kind of feels like if you're on defense that the field is literally just sloped against you as if you're going uphill and he's just going downhill on you. And that's really tough. He just wears on you. The back plate looks awesome. And yeah, he just wears on you. Just kind of, you almost feel it just watching the tape. Like you almost feel what the defenders must feel, like them getting tired and just kind of, it wears on you. He leans on you over time. That is so tough over a 60-minute football game. But everything else you said, yeah, it's spot on. He's not super shifty, elusive guy, but he's everything else, big, strong, fast, can break tackles, can really wear on you and can handle the load. And it's just all around really damn good at football. So yeah, Hampton's a great pick. I agree. He's definitely a top 20 player in this class. Probably should be picked in the top 22-ish picks, give or take. I think he's for sure a first round pick in the upcoming draft. You're muted again. You always do that. I set you up just right to go into the next one, and then you just leave me hanging.
Sorry, buddy. What I was saying is I think I'm going to do my best to make the Ashton Genty conversation interesting because he's everybody's number one, right? But I do think that there are some interesting things that we can take away from the conversation. So really quick, Boise State, 21 years old, only 5'8 and a half, 211 pounds, 3 years at Boise State, 1,652 offensive snaps, didn't do the combine, 94.9 offensive grade, 138 receiving yards and a touchdown, and almost 2,600 rushing yards and 29 touchdowns this year. So really crazy numbers for Ashton Genty. The vision is insane, like as good as it gets vision. Contact balance, some of the best we've ever seen. Really good shiftiness, good change of speed at the next level, which I thought was cool, right? Like he's kind of one of those guys that can stop and start and really just like doesn't miss a beat. Thought he was underutilized in the pass game, and I think he has a lot more in there to unlock. I didn't really love the targets that he got. I think that if you gave him targets in space, that shiftiness could have been unlocked at a different level in space. And I will like to see that if he goes to the right team. It's a little bit small. Top end speed is limited. Those are the only two knocks I have against him. Tell me what you think. And then I have some good conversation.
He's a bit of a fumbler at times, which I think is or could be an issue. Is that because the entire defense was just freaking hounding him pretty much every snap? I guess maybe that's a part of it, but had a bit of a fumbling issue. But other than that, yeah, I mean, no real other concerns. I mean, the body type, I mean, people could talk about the mileage that may be there, the amount of carries he received, but this guy is just so good. Even the contact that he did endure with that volume of carries, he doesn't take direct shots because of his low center of gravity, because of how shifty he is, just how good he is. He didn't take a lot of hard hits, hits that really kind of, you know, body blows that wear on you. You didn't see that from him. And it's because of just how adept he is at running the football, as just a pure runner overall. So some of those concerns I don't have as much of an issue with as maybe some others do, but fumbling might be something I would just add to the list there.
Okay. All right, well, where the conversation gets interesting is, do we see him as a top 10 pick in this draft? And where do we see him in the all 22 era? Because when we're talking about the top running back in this running back group, and a special of a player as he is, that's where the conversation needs to kind of begin, right? It's not really comparing him to the other guys here because he is the best of them, but how does he compare to the other guys we've gotten to review? And I have some takes. But let's start the conversation where do you have him in terms of kind of guys we've reviewed in the past few years?
I mean, you're the ranking guy. I hate rankings, but I think he's better than Bijan. Wherever that puts him, I think he's above Bijan in the last few years in that era. I guess he's also above Gibbs, but man, Gibbs' style just really speaks to me. But I think I would have Genty above both those guys. He's just a flat-out dude. I think he's worthy of a top 10 pick as a running back in this class. He's just that damn good. So, yeah, wherever that leaves him in the numbers, I'm probably missing guys. He's not Saquon as a prospect, but he's above Bijan for me.
Yeah, I agree. He's not Saquon as a prospect. I think the difference that separates Bijan and Gibbs from him is the receiving game. Didn't see enough of it. I'm not saying it doesn't exist. Just didn't see enough of it. And a 54.7 receiving grade tells me that maybe this is a guy that, because of how good he is as a pure rusher, we might be overinflating a little bit in terms of like the greatness factor, right? This is a phenomenal player. Still agrees the best one of the options we have today. I think I have Bijan over him, and Gibbs is like pretty close.
All I'm saying is, if you have a runner like that, if you're Boise State and you have a runner like that, your passing game is going to be predicated off of play action off of him. So the defense is flowing to him. So I'm not giving him the ball through the air. I just can't do it, because that's counterproductive to the whole point of using him to open up the passing game. And I think they were so one-dimensional, so to speak, because of Genty, that they just had to go away from him in the passing game, and he didn't have a lot of those opportunities. Even when they set up screens for him, it just wasn't there. There was just too much attention being brought to him that it just didn't make sense. So I think they just never really had the ability to put stuff like that in the offense for him, because it was so centric towards Ashton Genty in the first place, that at that point it's a counterpunch, and you don't counterpunch with your lead guy. At some point he needs A, to catch his breath, and B, you got to go where the defense is and take what they're giving you. So I think that could be a part of it. I think he'll be fine in the receiving game. I get it. We have to see it, et cetera, et cetera. But the unknown, so to speak, because it's not on tape as much with Genty as it was with those other guys, doesn't outweigh to me how I think he's just a better runner of the football than both of them.
Okay.
Damn, all right. I love Jahmyr Gibbs.
I know, dude. I love both of them, Bijan and Gibbs.
I love Bijan too, but... Man, I really love Gibbs.
But I think I have Genty behind. At least Bijan. Gibbs, I'm still kind of debating in my head. But like, really good football player. But like, that's kind of the conversation I wanted to have. Is like, if I have Bijan over him, where do I start thinking about him being a good fit in the NFL draft? And where would I actually start to consider taking him? because of this year's draft, and we're going to get into, I think, next episode, which I'm super excited about, like kind of our big boards and how we would actually take these guys. But when I go through the draft, right, it's like Tennessee's not taking quarterback. Browns definitely shouldn't take a quarterback. It'd be insane. Giants should definitely not take a quarterback. It'd be insane. Four is the Patriots. There's rumors that they would consider it, but with zero offensive line and receivers, it just doesn't make sense. Five, we're getting to Jacksonville. They have a few running backs. It's not a huge need for them, and they have other needs. Six is the Raiders, right? And I think that's where the conversation begins with them. But in my mind, and when I look at the Raiders' offense and also just like what they have and don't have, like, am I really taking Genty over some of the other things that I could add to this team? Am I taking him over Tet McMillan, right? If McMillan's there, am I taking him over some of the edge rushers like a Mike Green? Am I taking him over some of the corners like a Will Johnson? Or if you're a Jahdae Barron person, like, am I taking him over that for a team that still has a lot of needs? I don't think so.
Boy, I would hate to see him fall to the Saints. I'd really hate to see that at nine. But I think he's such a good pure football player. I think he makes a lot of sense for the Raiders. I would love to see him in Vegas. I'm about it. I think their offensive line is good enough. Yes, they need other weapons too, because your passing game, really your primary guy there is now a tight end. So now your offense is running through a tight end and a running back. Where are you creating space for those guys on the outside? That's really tough, unless they're going to turn around and also then take a wide receiver very early on in the next pick. They have to go wide receiver heavy or offense heavy in general if they're going to take Genty there. But to me, he's worth it because he might be the third best player in the draft. I think it's Carter, Hunter, Genty. I think those are the top three best players in the class, just regardless of position. You're going to let a top three player pass you by for, and I like Tet McMillan. I like him a lot. I wouldn't do that. I think he's that good. If he's the third best player in the draft and he's not a kicker and you're picking at six, then go ahead and take him. That's my thought process there. I'd hate to see him go to the Saints, but I would love to see him go to the Chicago Bears. Boy, would that be fun. But those are two landmines that I don't think you navigate. If you want Genty and you're picking at 10 like the Bears, I don't think you can sit on your hands and wait for him to get there. I think he gets taken by one of those two teams. And I really do think it's zeroing in on the Raiders. I do think that's going to be the ultimate pick there.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that's the pick for the Raiders, although it's not the pick I would make, right? But the Raiders just have this history recently of just taking best player available. They had Michael Mayer, right? And they didn't really care. And they doubled down and took Brock Bowers.
I wouldn't have made the Mayer pick. I would have made the Bowers pick, but yeah.
Right, but I'm saying in 2 years in a row, it didn't matter that they already had just added depth at that position. They said, it's best player, we're going to take him. So if that is how their mindset is, it makes sense to me to think that they would take Genty, and you can go make that bet at Pick Pool, right? Download the app today. But yeah, so Genty to the Raiders makes a lot of sense from that standpoint. But if I'm talking about which team I think should actually do this, it's really only the Bears. The Saints to me would be an absolute, it would be tragic if he went there. Cause we talk about what just happened to Saquon 4 years with the Giants and like just not 5 years and just such a bad situation the entire time. The Saints are a team that we've been dying to flip kind of the salary cap issues that they have. And when you take a running back in the top 10, you're basically paying them as like a top running back in the league. And that's not what this team should be doing with their money, right? They need to build the offensive line back up. They need to get some receiving weapons now with Chris Olave's head injuries. The defense is falling apart, right? It's gotten so old. There's a lot of other moves that team needs to make before they go add a running back. So the Bears to me is like ideal situation. I agree with you. They probably have to trade up. I wonder if Carolina would be interested in trading down since they lost a lot of picks with the Bryce Young trade. So like, could that be the move? It's like, just move two spots, jump the Saints, get Genty. You don't have to give a ton to do it, right? It's not like you have to give a second round pick. Probably have to give maybe a third to go those two spots. And I think you can do that. But I think like when you're talking about that offense, right? You have Roma Dunze, DJ Moore on the outside. You have people to open that offense up at receiver. Cole Kmet's fine at tight end, decent blocker, right? What you want. Imagine Caleb Williams if he also had Genty, right? It's just like maximize the talent of that team. It's not, in my opinion, it's not adding another receiver. You can say like, all right, add Matthew Golden, and now you have this like crazy speed threat to take the top off. And it's like, there's limitations to what that's actually going to do to this team. if the Bears aren't going to make a move to trade all the way up to get Abdul Carter, which I think is like 1A for them, trade up two spots and get Ashton Jeanty and just be super happy that you're giving your quarterback everything that he needs to be successful. To me, that's like great process for them.
Yeah, but they have to hold their breath at six, because I don't think you can then, well, you can't trade up to five for a running back. That's just too much. Now you're giving up a two and a four, perhaps. I'm, you know, the value chart in front of me or anything like that, but now you're really giving up multiple premium picks for a running back when your team is still young and you have time with a young quarterback. So to that end, I think if
we just for context there, right? Like, 10 could be Ted McMillan. Your second round pick could be Caleb Johnson. Your fourth round pick could be, you know, name another player, right? Or Harold Fannin Jr. It's like, are you really trading away Caleb Johnson and Ted McMillan to get Ashton Jeanty? No, right? Like, you just shouldn't do that. It's bad process. But if you only have to move a couple spots, I like it. Go ahead, continue.
They have Ted McMillan at home. His name is Roma Dunze. But yeah, who, you know, insert player. It could be an offensive lineman, or it could be Michael Williams. Go ahead and trade up. If it's going to be Michael Williams, just go ahead and trade the pick. I think you just have to hold your breath. If he gets past the Raiders at six, then you make the move. Otherwise, it's just too pricey. But Jeanty will be good wherever he goes. If he goes to the Saints, if worst case scenario, we're sitting here, hands in our head, oh no, we really did not want Jeanty to go. Jeanty's still going to be very good. He's just going to be beat up. He's going to be the guy in that Rocky movie you tried to recreate during the film portion of this episode here, because he is going to be battered and bruised in that situation.
All right. Well, I think an hour and 42 minutes in, we've done our job. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. If you haven't yet, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and X at @all22_PFF. And give us a review wherever you watch or listen to your podcast. Have a great day. Go.